Today on the 21st show, America's war with Iran. The country's supreme leader has been killed, as have several American service members, along with hundreds of civilians, mostly in Iran, but also in Israel and other countries in the region. Illinois' Democratic U.S. senators condemn the action.
This is a premeditated war of choice by Donald Trump. He has clearly been planning to do this, repeatedly threatening Iran with strikes, and our service members and their families will pay the price.
We'll hear reaction to the war from across Illinois and talk about what comes next. I'm Brian Mackey. That's all coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. But first, news. From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. As you know, early Saturday morning, the United States and Israel went to war with Iran.
Strikes in Tehran and right across the country. The Iranian Red Crescent says more than 200 people are dead, with more blasts reported this evening.
Israel and the U.S. went back to war with Iran just after breakfast time in Tehran, hitting the capital and sites across the country. It's hard to get information about what's happening there. Video of an attack on a school in southern Iran is circulating. Iranian state TV was reporting 85 killed.
Iran has retaliated after Israel and the U.S. launched a barrage of airstrikes across Iran. We saw several sites hit in what Donald Trump has described on social media as major combat operations.
As we go to air Monday morning, there's been no formal Oval Office address, but in the wee hours of Saturday morning, 1:30 a.m. Illinois time, President Trump posted a video to his social media website announcing the war.
They attempted to rebuild their nuclear program and to continue developing long-range missiles that can now threaten our very good friends and allies in Europe, our troops stationed overseas, and could soon reach the American homeland. Just imagine how emboldened this regime would be if they ever had and actually were armed with nuclear weapons as a means to deliver their message. For these reasons, the United States military is undertaking a massive and ongoing operation to prevent this very wicked, radical dictatorship from threatening America and our core national security interests. We are going to destroy their missiles and raise their missile industry to the ground. It will be totally, again, obliterated.
I think it's worth noting that the president himself used the word war here, not police action, not intervention, not any other sort of euphemism that will come up in our conversation today. Separately, and unlike in past military actions during the Trump administration, the president acknowledged the possibility of dead and wounded American servicemen and women. And indeed, there have been reports of at least three killed so far, more wounded, as well as at least 200 civilians in Iran, according to the Red Crescent, there, as well as civilian casualties in Israel and other countries in the region. Here in Illinois, members of Congress issued statements on falling along party lines. Republicans were largely supportive. Congressman Darren LaHood, Congresswoman Mary Miller, and Congressman Mike Bost issued similar statements. I'll read from Bost's. He said, "After exhausting every diplomatic measure to ensure Iran never develops a nuclear weapon, President Trump has acted decisively to protect America's national security interests against the world's leading sponsor of terrorism. God bless our military men and women in harm's way. May the uncertain days ahead lead to a lasting peace for years to come." Reaction from Democrats, on the other hand, was swift and negative. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin said, though there is bipartisan support for stopping the development of nuclear weapons in Iran, there is no consensus for another interminable war in the Middle East. I was one of 23 senators who voted against the war in Iraq. A war in Iran with the goal of regime change could be another long-term military commitment with deadly consequences for thousands of American troops. The rash and unpredictable conduct of President Trump is a well-established worry in many ways, but an impulsive commander-in-chief is a deadly combination, end quote. Illinois U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth had a similar statement. She also had a press call. We'll hear excerpts of that a little later in our conversation today. We want to hear from you throughout the hour, 800-222-9455. How do you feel about the fact that America has gone to war with Iran? Was it justified? Do you think it was a good idea, a bad idea? 800-222-9455 is the number to join us today, 800-222-9455. Well, we talked about this on the program on Friday with a panel of people with personal ties to Iran as well as expertise in the region, and they are back with us again today. Elahi Javadi lived in Iran for more than two decades, was born just after the revolution. She eventually came to the U.S. and is now an associate professor at Illinois State University in Information Systems. Welcome back to the program. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me back, Brian.
Also with us, Matteo Mohamed Farzana, again, professor and chair of the history and political science departments at Northeastern Illinois University. He was also born in Iran. His family was displaced by the Iraq War in 1980. He came to the U.S. in 84. Matteo, welcome back to the 21st show to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
And later this hour, we'll be joined again by Nicholas Grossman. He is teaching at the moment, political science professor at the University of Illinois, author of Drones and Terror. Again, you can join us, 800-222-9455. Elahi Javadi, I'll start with you. What are your initial reactions to what's happened over the weekend?
Brian, hi to you and hi to your listeners. I would like to start with honoring the three American soldiers who lost their lives. Also honoring every victim of this regime in Israel, in neighboring countries, as well as the thousands of Iranians gunned down by the regime inside Iran. President Trump has called it a war, but I would like to share with your listeners that from my perspective and from perspective of around 90 million Iranians inside Iran, we feel like this is a hostage rescue mission. We feel this is a liberation. Over 870 Americans have been killed by Iranian proxies. This regime has been racing toward nuclear weapons. We feel this, we are being liberated, and I would like to extend my sympathies to the families of the military personnel, families of the civilian victims of this regime. We feel grateful to all sacrifices made by the American and Israeli military forces.
Matteo Mohamed Farzana, same question to you to begin with. What is your initial reaction to what happened this weekend?
Well, this is obviously a war of aggression by a genocidal state in the region and by a U.S. foreign policy establishment that has been concocting this plan, obviously for some time, but they thought that this is the right time to do that. And I'm sorry for 92 million Iranians who are defenseless, not only from the aggressions of the Israelis and the Americans, but also from their own regime in the past.
So YouGov took a poll of Americans over the weekend, and the initial reaction to America getting involved was pretty negative. 34% approval, 44% disapproval, 22% unsure. I wonder what you make of the case the Trump administration has publicly made so far for this war. And Matteo Mohamed Farzan, I'll start with you.
Well, the obvious question that we have to ask is, has the administration been truthful about where Iran is with its nuclear program? Up to now, the listeners should know, Iran has shown no evidence, nobody's shown any evidence that they're after a nuclear bomb. That's a fact. They have had enrichment program for a while, and the grade has been upgraded, so to speak, but still there's no evidence. What I concoct based on historical origins of this issue and American behavior with its proxy state in the region is that no one wants a peaceful Middle East simply because a peaceful Middle East will do several things, one of which is that it will allow for growth and for a competition that maybe other states outside it would not want to see. That's number one. Number two, US and Israel have had a close relationships 10 minutes into the independence of State of Israel in May of 1948. US recognized it and ever since has been supporting it. And the foreign policy establishment probably looks at it that if they make any peace with anyone, Israel would not be safe in the region. And that couldn't be further from the truth. So I think this is part of a longer plan to create instability in the region. And perhaps the next state that will be affected by this is probably Turkey.
Do you think that, Mateo Mohammed Farzana, do you think that Israel is calling the shots here? I mean, we can come to that point now. I did see a comment where the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, mentioned that this had been planning for months. Do you get the sense that this is something that they are, you know, a lot of people blame Israel for everything that goes wrong in the world. I'm not saying that in this context here. I'm saying, you know, in this particular conflict, that this is more in their interests than the United States.
Actually, I don't look at it that way. I actually don't think Israel calls the shot. All the shots are called from Washington and people that are planning for wars and invasions and occupations and destruction. I think those people who say Israel calls the shots actually might be thinking along the line that the Jewish population of the world has always concocted to destroy others. And I disagree with that. I don't think that's there's much truth to it. Actually, vice versa. The Jews have been subjected to anti-Semitic attacks everywhere, with the biggest one being launched by Nazis during the Holocaust, as many people know. We didn't have Muslims involved. We didn't have the Middle East involved. So to think that Israel is planning all of this without the permission of the United States or without at recommendations or green lights that the U.S. gives, I think that's a bit childish at this point.
Alahi Javadi, what do you think of this idea? It sounds like you and Professor Farzana have different perspectives here on whether this is a liberation or an attack, or how do you see it? Do you have any response?
Thanks, Brian, for asking me. Iran's participation in JCPOA is frequently referenced as their will to be civil, their will to be a peaceful nation. And my colleague, Dr. Farzaneh, my compatriot, expresses concerns as if Iranians' violations of JCPOA were benign or misdemeanors. Enrichment levels were close to 60% purity, near weapons grade, far exceeding the agreement of 3.67%. As of late 2024, Iran's stockpile of enriched uranium was over 30 times of that allowed in JCPOA. They had advanced centrifuges. They had restricted International Atomic Energy Agency's access. They had deactivated cameras. So I would disagree with Dr. Farzaneh, and it's not peaceful. This operation is not standing between peace and the Middle East. this operation is the first step toward a peaceful Middle East. I lived under Iranian regime. I played the game of reform, Brian, and I want your listeners to know that I had two uncles who were political prisoners in this regime, one for 3.5 years, one for 6.5 years. They spent their best years of their lives in the prison. I lost an uncle to the Iran war. So I wasn't the one who fled Iran after the revolution, seeking asylum from the benevolent country that the U.S. is. I stayed there. I voted for Khatami. In fact, it was my first time I was eligible for voting that I voted for Khatami, the reformist. And yet, I was in the second year of my education in the best technical university of Iran, Sharif University of Technology, where the Iranian regime massacred the students. So, and I'm telling you, Brian, I continue to vote for the reformists. We were hoping that there would be no need for intervention. Which country, what people around the world would go and cheer on the streets and say thank you, U.S. I love you, Trump. Thank you, Trump. Where do you see that, Brian? We've been playing this game that, oh, Iran wants peace. Iran wants to have prosperity in the country. They don't. And anything contradictory, I would say, is trying to convince people of the world otherwise. And I'm not a politician, I'm not a military strategist, I haven't studied political science, and I haven't studied history as much as my colleague Dr. Farzani has done. So I'm a little bit disappointed that some of the facts that show specifically that Iran is not working toward peace. Iran has violated JCPOA. Iran has violated several human rights protocols. They are misrepresentation of the facts and the intentions and the record of the Islamic Republic.
All right, we're going to have to take a break right now. We're on a fixed clock on our program. We will continue this conversation when we return. We're talking about the United States going to war with the Iranian government. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today. That's 800-222-9455. We'll have more after a short break. This is The 21st Show. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the American war with Iran that launched this weekend. 1:30 a.m. Illinois time, President Trump posted a video to Truth Social and said that we were a war, and he is aiming to totally obliterate Iran's nuclear program. And he seemed to be aiming for a change in the government, regime change, as the phrase goes. We are talking today about this again, as we did on Friday before this happened, with Matteo Mohamed Farzana, professor and chair of both history and political science at Northeastern Illinois University. He was born in Iran, has been in the U.S. since 1984. Also, Elahi Javadeh, who lived in Iran for more than two decades, born after the revolution, came to the U.S. and is now associate professor in information systems at Illinois State University in Normal. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us. I do want to share some reaction we got by text message. Helen in Springfield says, perhaps reasons exist for trying to overthrow the Iranian government. However, I doubt if this initiative is urgent enough to overlook getting congressional approval for warlike activity. This scenario reminds me of 25 years ago when we were warned of the existence of weapons of mass destruction being held by Saddam Hussein. Until Congress agrees that there are compelling reasons to go to war, I will be very opposed to United States aggression toward Iran. Wayne in Champaign was more succinct, although in those lines he said, illegal, unjustified, and in direct opposition to his and Stephen Miller's campaign promises. Finally, Randy in rural Peoria County said, I do not like Iran running around the world making the problems it does. If they are reduced to the inability for making serious damage to others, then I'm okay with it. My reason is that the culture of that whole region has no ability to find moderation. He says the answer is not change in government. It is a change in culture, and that is a 1,000-year-long journey. All right, 800-222-9455 if you want to join us. And let's go now to the phones. Paul is calling from Carbondale. Paul, thank you for calling in.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I'm really rolling my eyes at a lot of the responses from Americans because they seem to be forgetting that anyone who sucks in the region is either directly or tacitly guided by the regime. And so it's time to smack Iran. It is time for freedom for those people. And I'm really over everyone forgetting the evils and the atrocities that have been committed worldwide by that regime. Like, it's time, and I'm glad it's happening.
Do you think, are you okay with the WEC that the president did not, you know, sort of lay out a longer case or a case to the Congress or get an authorization from Congress?
You know, I plan on driving a straight road, but if a deer is in front of me, I swerve real quick. Sometimes, you know, situation dictates action, and that action time is now.
All right, Paul, thanks for the call. Appreciate you sharing your perspective. We also have on another line Roberto calling from Rockford, Illinois. Roberto, thank you for calling in.
Hello. I was just calling in because it feels like a lot of the rhetoric seems to be Islamophobic in nature. When we're looking at some of the actions by the U.S., specifically the congressional unapproved military strikes and then seemingly a declaration of war from the president unilaterally, it feels a little... It's reminding me of how we got into previous wars in the Middle East. We did an unprovoked attack, and we have confirmed that the U.S. and Israel targeted some schools that killed children. I think the previous caller mentioned, I want to drive a straight line, but if there's a deer in the way, I'm going to swerve. That feels a little unconscionable when we're talking about the deaths of innocent children.
All right, Roberto, thank you for calling in. I appreciate you sharing your perspective. Mateo Mohamed Farzan, I'll come to you if you have any response to what the callers had to say.
Well, people need to realize that Iran has not posed a threat against the United States or U.S. citizens here in the continental U.S. There was a war in Iraq, and Iran was involved. And yes, Iran did kill some Americans. The evidence shows that. Iran did support Hezbollah in Lebanon. And in 1982, for those people who remember, Hezbollah at the time bombed the U.S. barracks that led to the killing of over 200 U.S. service people. So I'm not naive to the fact that Iran's regime is a bad regime. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. But at the same time, if we are going to be law-abiding people and respect the rule of law internationally and here at home, then yes, we need to get approval from Congress. Yes, we need to get approval from our people in order to engage, spend taxpayers' money for the sake of whatever it is. We still don't know what the objective is. And putting American lives in danger. We already have four service people killed and over 550 Iranians, including what Roberto was saying, the primary school in Minab with 148 children killed. So as an American, I would like to spend my money as a taxpayer where I can bring peace, not destruction and annihilation of something that it will grow right back up once the dust settles.
Alahi Javadeh, I wonder what your reaction is specifically to, well, to either the callers or what you think might change as a result of the killing of the Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei.
Thank you, Paul, and thank you, Roberto, for your comments. I would like to say that Clinton launched 78-day NATO air campaign in Kosovo without explicit congressional approval. So And then things happened. The House tied on authorizing the strikes. Clinton ignored it, continued bombing anyway. And this is referring to authorization of for use of military force that it has precedence. So it's not happening for the first time. And Kosovo mission, I think it was a liberation. And I think and feel the same that this is a liberation mission. And in response to Roberto, and I appreciate you calling Islamophobia. Phobia is an irrational fear. And I can tell you as a woman, as someone who spent my life until I was 24 years old in Iran, this is not irrational fear. Every fear that we are sharing here in diaspora with you, these are real. And there are examples of that I would be happy to share, but I'm thinking this is not the time. My hope is that the top IRGC leaders and commanders and top clergy people, those who have hands in killings of people, are removed. Or you know, the IRGC, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, I would say 50% of these people are there just because of employment. Imagine, this is a country that a lot of employment is government based, so people need jobs, and 50% of people who work for IRGC or Basij, they're there just because of the paycheck. Another 40% are resentful of the brutality and corruption. So there is only 10%. Of that 10% is removed by U.S. Air Forces, as well as it has been happening these past 2 days. Then we have our transitional leader, Reza Pahlavi. A lot of people are chanting his name inside and outside Tehran. He has a very well-established blueprint for the emergency days, transitional time. He has issued amnesty for all and every non-criminal bureaucrat and non-criminal military and non-criminal IRGC member. So we are hoping that with him in the transitional state, and with him being very wise, learning the lessons from the history and from Iraq and from other similar situation of liberation, we will be able to take it from there and rebuild our countries. Keep in mind that Iran has 90% literacy, 99% literacy among the youth. We are the top, among top 5 to 7 exporter of STEM skilled forces. Imagine that after America, after Russia, China, and India, it's Iran. We are the top country in terms of skilled workers in the Middle East. So, and there is a lot of human, intellectual, and investment opportunities coming from Iranian in diaspora. So we can assure you, as an Iranian, we will be able to rebuild. All we need is elimination of those whose lives, and it depends on the destruction of Iran, and those are the people inside Iran. I want to also address Dr. Farzaneh's point on school being targeted. We don't know that. We know that Iran in the past has targeted civilian civilian points inside Iran and in the neighboring countries. So I am telling you, as someone who lost a close friend when Iranian government shoots the Ukrainian airplane in 2020, why did they do that? In response to the U.S. Killing of Qasem Soleimani.
Yeah.
Yes. So what did they want? They want to appease their bases inside Iran. They want to say that we did it, we retaliated. And what did they do? They created this mourning, this emergency situation inside the Iran, and they kind of use this event as a shelter to say that, hey, US, we're in trouble, so we don't want to escalate the war. We already have created a crisis inside. So I lost a friend there, and I'm telling you, there is no evidence as of this point that this school was targeted by Israeli or American forces. This has to be investigated, and I am sad to say that it's very possible that the Iranian has done it themselves. I want to share a quick point. Is that I receive videos from Hamadan that IRGC is misfiring missiles. So they are trying to test their military equipment right in the middle of the war without turning on the sirens, and these missiles are hitting residential areas. So the fact, yes, I'm going to stop there.
Okay. All right. Well, let me bring another voice into our conversation now. Nicholas Grossman, professor of political science at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, author of Drones in Terror, joins us coming straight from class. Nick, thank you for being with us again today on the 21st show. I want to share an email. We've been talking about a number of topics, but it, of late, whether it matters that there was no congressional authorization for this, no declaration of war, which we haven't done since 1943, but no authorization for use of military force either. Listener Lucinda emailed in, said, if we list the military actions taken recently that have not been run by Congress first, both parties, I think it's funny to be complaining about that. Nick, what do you think about how this was done and the lack of congressional authorization here?
I think it's a really big deal that the lack of congressional authorization is not something that is brand new, that presidents have been accumulating more power at the expense of Congress for decades, and a lot of that having to do with war powers. But this is the biggest example of it, the biggest U.S. military action without involving Congress at all, and not even without getting authorization from Congress, but without even respecting Congress's constitutional role in the process, without asking Congress for permission. And that shows contempt for democracy, contempt for the Constitution, contempt for rule of law. But not only is it that, it also is something that undermines the U.S. military war effort. So having Congress on board, having a public case to make to have the people on board get things that make a war effort sustainable, that when the public is opposed to a war, it is much harder to prosecute it, to see it through, to carry on the difficult task to get to the ambitious goals. And here, Trump has launched a large-scale war with all sorts of potential consequences and doesn't have Congress on board. That means doesn't necessarily have the funding on board, doesn't have the American people on board. And even if somebody really wanted to discount rule of law and say none of that stuff actually matters and the Constitution doesn't matter, the War Powers Act doesn't matter, if somebody even really wants to do that, even so, the U.S. is going to be in a worse position to prosecute the war because it doesn't have that public support. I also don't think people should totally discount the constitutional and democratic aspects of it, that Bush had congressional authorization to invade Afghanistan and to invade Iraq, got two separate authorizations for that. When there were other more limited military operations, something like when Trump bombed Nigeria or when Obama joined Europeans in intervening in the Libyan civil war, that both of those were more limited military actions than we're seeing now. And there were still potentially war powers criticisms of them, but by being more limited, the consequences of them were decently smaller than this bigger Iran war.
Mateo Mohamed Farzana, do you want to respond to anything? We've got to take another break in about a minute and a half here.
No, pretty much. I think Dr. Grossman hit the right points. We don't have permission to do it, like I said before Dr. Grossman joined us. If Americans want to be seen as people that are law-abiding and they respect international law specifically or the Constitution of the United States, then we need to go through that process. But I don't think this administration is going to do that with all the evidence that's out there. The president ignored the decision that came down from the Supreme Court about the tariffs last week or the week before that. So I think we're in sort of a wild, wild west kind of a mentality as far as Washington goes. And that's very unfortunate for everybody in America and everybody in Iran that's being bombed to pieces.
All right. If you want to join us today, again, still 800-222-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455. 202-222-9455. A couple more text messages we got in. Wayne in Savoy, Illinois says, my first thought was Japan was still negotiating with the U.S. when it launched the sneak attack on Pearl Harbor. That did not work out so well for the Japanese. I fear this may not work out so well for the United States. Sherry in Hayworth says, an illegal war. The Trump regime and the Republicans that allow it because they have control, and even though it would only take a handful of Republicans to stop this, they do nothing. She says, they are destroying our country, not to mention other countries. Deplorable. We are all in danger. 800-222-9455. We will continue after a short break. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about America's going to war with Iran over the weekend. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today. 800-222-9455. Our guests include Mateo Mohamed Farzana, professor and chair of history and political science at Northeastern Illinois University and an Iranian native. Elahi Javadeh, also from Iran, who is an associate professor of information systems at Illinois State University. And Nicholas Grossman, professor in political science at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, author of the book Drones and Terror. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. I do want to stay on this point of congressional authorization. Over the weekend, on Saturday afternoon, one of our U.S. senators, Tammy Duckworth, held a press call. I joined that and asked her about the legal authority for this war. You called this a war of choice. What do you understand to be the legal authority of the administration to carry out these attacks? And if none, then who will bear the responsibility for that? I mean, are the armed services chiefs responsible for obeying illegal orders here, or what?
Well, the Trump administration obviously is trying to claim Article 2, that the president can launch such a strike because, you know, if he can launch us a strike without congressional approval if there was an initial strike against America, which was not the case here, or if there was imminent danger and there was evidence that Iran was about to strike America or American troops. There's no evidence of that I have been shown, and we'll see if they present any evidence of that when they come to a brief Congress here this coming week. The Trump administration has spoken out of both sides of their mouths. On the one hand, the president claims that he has completely annihilated the Iran nuclear program with Operation Midnight Hammer. And yet he also says that they were about to develop nuclear weapons to attack with the capability of attacking the United States. And in what's publicly available in unclassified channels, it's clear that Iran does not have the capability of long-range missiles to strike America. They have short-range and mid-range missiles. They don't have the capability of launching, even if they had a nuclear warhead, a strike against the United States. So I don't think the president has the authority to launch this strike, but we'll see what he has to say when his representatives come in front of the Senate. I also want to say that, again, I've signed on to Senator Kaine's war powers resolution, and that is where we can stop him, as if Republicans find their spine and we vote in the Senate this week to block any further involvement in Iran.
And it's worth noting, as Duckworth did elsewhere in that press call, that the Kaine resolution is co-sponsored by Senator Rand Paul. So a bipartisanship there. Nick Grossman, I wonder what reaction you have to that and what you think the options are for Congress actually exerting itself here when this administration has proved so impervious to other attempts at reining it in elsewhere in the government.
They're
pretty limited options wise. So Senator Duckworth is correct in that the war is not being conducted legally and that the War Powers Resolution is the right law that would be in place. And yet, even that is something that has shifted power towards the presidency, and they're not really following it. So what the War Powers Resolution does is originally with the Constitution says that Congress has the power to declare war and envisions the president as commander in chief as then managing the war in ways that Congress had allocated and had decided. And with the invention of 20th century technology, things like missiles, airplanes, that there would, especially nuclear weapons, that there would be times where the president might need to act without being able to take the time and go to Congress. And to balance this out, Congress has the War Powers Resolution of 1973, which says that in the event of a national security emergency triggered by an attack on the US or the US military, then the president is allowed to use force without asking Congress for 60 days. And then after those 60 days, if he doesn't have permission, he's supposed to stop. He has 30 days left to stop. And just the fact that Duckworth and Paul and other senators are having to do a war powers resolution in the first place is a big shift of power towards the president and away from Congress and away from the law. So this happened in Trump's first term, where the United States was supporting, it was a Saudi bombing campaign in Yemen, and the U.S. had been supporting it directly with things like mid-air refueling, so the U.S. military was directly involved. And this had gone on for a while, and Congress opposed it, and they passed a resolution saying that the U.S. has to stop. Already, that shouldn't have been the case. The president should have had to stop already because he didn't get permission from Congress. But they passed this resolution. Then Trump vetoed it. And then there were enough Republicans in Congress to prevent an override of the veto. And so the U.S. didn't stop. So that effectively, in the first term, shifted the law, even though not the letter of the law, but the way that the United States operates, from saying the president can use force in the event of an emergency, but if he doesn't get congressional permission, he has to stop after 60 days, and then change that to the president can use force when he feels like it. And if Congress says it's not an emergency, Congress needs a supermajority to get him to stop. And then with the Iran war, that it is that same sort of thing, but taken even more dramatically, even more drastically for something that is a lot larger. And Congress is, in theory, able to say under the War Powers Act, you should stop. But based on the precedent set in Trump's first term, he could veto that and that wouldn't do it. If Congress really wanted to stop it, they could pass laws saying that the military has to stop. But again, he could veto or I suppose just ignore that. So if they really want to have leverage, then they would have to exercise it besides just saying it's illegal or perhaps trying to go to court and saying that the White House is ignoring Congress's constitutional responsibilities, which even if the courts were open to that, and they're usually not, but even if they were, that would take a while. And so Congress could then, in theory, cut off funding for it, but cutting off funding for American troops that are in combat and putting them at a greater risk is something that members of Congress usually don't like doing, that tends to have greater political consequences for them. So they're very wary of it. And the biggest problem, though, of all of this is that Congress is, both houses of Congress are controlled by Republicans. And while there are a few handful of Republicans, like you mentioned, Senator Rand Paul and Thomas Massie is another one, who have criticized the war and criticized both the conduct of the war itself and the fact that the president is doing it illegally without congressional permission, very few Republicans actually have. And the Republican leaders in the House and Senate don't want to bring that up and don't want to make an issue of it. So our core problem, and this is something that even the founders didn't envision as one of the problems, but is that the majorities in Congress, Republican majorities, have decided to completely abdicate their responsibility for things like war or, for that matter, power of the purse. And so as long as we have a White House that is choosing not to follow the Constitution, choosing to break the law and doesn't seem to care that they are, and a Congress that seems to be perfectly fine with or even supportive or on board with abdicating their responsibility and just letting the president act outside of the Constitution, then there really isn't any recourse for it. The recourse for it is a Congress that makes a big issue of it, and this Congress is choosing not to.
All right, 800-222-9455. We've got maybe 6 minutes left on the program. Let's get a couple more callers in if we can. Paul from Urbana. Paul, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, I'd like to point out that the initial decapitation attack that took out Khomeini was also directed at the opposition, their homes. So I think it's likely that the person that spoke about voting in the elections, that her candidate was attacked as well. So Israel clearly wants chaos as opposed to regime change, it seems to me. I also wanted to mention that Beirut's Gamari, who we mentioned on Friday, will be on campus March 12th, and I hope you can find some time to have him talk about his book, The Long War Against Iran. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Paul. Appreciate it. And we also have calling from, oh, where is this call? Oh, there it is. Christine in Rockford on line two. Christine, thanks for calling in.
Yeah. Hi. Hello. I appreciate the your guest saying that there's no credible proof that Israel targeted that school. It was probably done by the Iranians. So thank you for that. I am not a Republican nor a Democrat. I'm an independent, but I do believe that the world is in imminent danger from Khomeini, who's a monster to his people, a blatant anti-Semite, believes Israel does not have the right to exist. And I wish in the 1930s, President Roosevelt would have taken out Hitler. So I commend Trump for doing this. I don't agree with everything he does, but I think that that was a good move. Your thoughts?
I appreciate you sharing yours, Christine. That is what I think. Thank you so much for calling in. Just about 5 minutes left in the program. Maybe we can go around the horn, as they say, one more time. I'm sorry I used that phrase. Mateo Mohamed Farzana, I'll start with you. Where are you? How are you thinking about the range of possibilities? Chaos, succession for the Iranian people now.
I think Iranians should get ready for a chaotic period of a long-term situation. They should be prepared for destruction of their infrastructure and possibly boots on the ground that will drag U.S. into a protracted war. That's not what I'm wishing for, but I don't see any evidence that's going to go the other way around based on what Dr. Grossman said. Donald Trump is an unconventional president, and the people that he's got around him have gone totally rogue. That's not good for U.S. citizens, and it's not good for the 92 million innocent Iranians.
All right. And Elahi Javadeh, what do you think are the range of possibilities for the Iranian people? I know you mentioned Reza Pahlavi, if I'm saying that correctly, the
yes.
Eldest son of the last Shah. It seems a lot of people think that is one of the more unlikely outcomes, but where are you on this?
Thank you, Brian. I want to say it quickly. I understand there are disagreements with President Trump, but this is not President Trump saying that IAEA says Iran had enough material for 9 warheads. And UK, France, Germany triggered JCPOA snapback in October 2025. So this is an imminent threat, and I am hoping for the best. I'm hoping for a quick return of order with the help of our transitional leader, Reza Pahlavi. So I'm staying hopeful, and I thank American forces for their sacrifices, as well as Israeli forces.
Nick Grossman, just a couple of minutes left. Final thoughts from you about the range of possibilities here in the near term and the long term.
So my biggest thought with this is that international relations and war is not a morality play. It's not something about who is good or bad, or say who has done good or bad things. I am fully on board with the argument that Ayatollah Khomeini and the Iranian regime have done a lot of terrible things, that their nuclear program is disruptive. They are violently disruptive in a lot of the Middle East, that they recently massacred a lot of protesters, thousands of protesters, just to maintain a repressive theocratic rule. So I am fully on board with various arguments that say that Iran should be opposed. The question then, though, when it comes to war, is not do they deserve it or is the government bad, but will the war itself make things better? Will it lead to a outcome that is an improvement and is such an improvement that it is worth the death and destruction and suffering that a war inevitably causes? And From where I sit, and I've been following this very closely, but there does not seem to be a path to something that is likely to make things better. That the CIA before the war had assessed that the likely outcome in Iran of Khomeini being killed, the most likely is Iranian Revolutionary Guard hardliners taking over. I don't think that would be better. At the moment, the regime is intact because it is not a personalist regime like, say, Saddam Hussein in Iraq or Kim Jong-un in North Korea, where things are really built around the leader, but is more of a movement, of a bureaucracy, of a whole state. And at least for the time being, people have moved up another notch. And so it looks like the most likely outcomes are the Iranian regime holding together, perhaps being more hardline, albeit weakened temporarily, but with greater reason to be even more hostile, or some sort of chaos. And I see no follow-on whatsoever to manage that chaos to try to make it where something better happens. And so this is where, with Trump not having congressional authorization, but not having American military support, and not having international support, with not having any sort of coalition that is working on it together, that we're looking at most likely either a hardline or harder line Iran, or a kind of festering chaos failed state in a large area with a very geostrategically important region, and something that will likely have reverberations for many years, probably decades.
All right. Nicholas Grossman from the University of Illinois, author of Drones and Terror. You can read his work on Substack at ARC Digital. Elahi Javade, professor at Illinois State University, and Mateo Muhammad Farzana, professor and chair of history and political science at Northeastern Illinois University. Thank you all so much for sharing your time and perspectives with us again today on the 21st show. This obviously is not the last word on this. We will have future conversations on what is happening between the U.S. and Iran and the rest of the world. That's it for today, though. The 21st show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening.